Welcome back to the second hour of the Rob O'Donnell Show here on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. It is 411, 61 degrees on this Wednesday, May 14th, 2025. So about all this hysteria about these alleged cuts to Medicaid, it's, I've played time and time again where people are like, well, you know, they could happen. They may happen. They might happen. Well, Governor Josh Shapiro, Pennsylvania, was on this station earlier today, and he pretty much said the same thing. But in the same breath saying that there are going to be cuts to Medicaid, in the same breath, he says that he hasn't seen any cuts yet. And once he does, then he'll be able to talk more on them. So I'm going to start with that. Let's play this because he also gets into things about rural hospitals and such, but kind of leaves it hanging out there. And I'm going to fill in a little of those gaps for you. So this is Governor Josh Shapiro earlier today.
Hundreds of thousands of people in Pennsylvania, including Northeastern PA, are going to lose access to Medicaid, access to health care. Second, our rural hospitals, which are so Medicaid dominant, meaning they've got a lot of Medicaid patients that go through there, and so they rely on the money coming in from Medicaid. Our rural hospitals, which are teetering on the brink of closure, you will see more and more close. This isn't hyperbole. This isn't, you know, just a lot of noise. This is the reality of what they're debating in Washington. I've been very honest with our congressional delegation, and once I see the specific cuts that they're proposing, I'm going to break down the impact it's going to have per congressional or by congressional district.
So you heard him at the end there. Once I see these cuts, so he hasn't seen cuts at all yet, but yet he's going on radio shows, he's going on TV, he's getting in front of a camera or a microphone and saying there's going to be billions of dollars worth of cuts. And then he talks about rural hospitals and how they will be the most affected. And rural hospitals are facing a severe problem. There's a thing called the, it's called CMS, which is the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS Area Wage Index. And that's how it's determined what hospitals get reimbursed at. So if you are an urban hospital and you do an MRI, you get reimbursed $6,000. If you are a rural hospital and you do that very same MRI on that very same patient, you may only get $3,000 or $4,000 because the way the system figures out, it's based off local wages. And of course, local wages are going to be less in rural America than they are in our inner cities. That's just the way it is. Now, what the governor fails to say there is that in the Trump first administration, they moved to fix this system. They moved to make it. The Trump administration made several attempts to address disparities in the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services area wage, which adjusts Medicaid payments to hospital based on local labor costs. These disparities often disadvantage rural and low-wage hospitals. In Trump's first term, they did fix this. They said they were going to increase the low wages for hospitals in fiscal year 2020. They proposed overhauling the community-based wage index in 2018, and they also eliminated the imputed wage index floor for all urban states in fiscal year 2019. You know what happened? Democrats sued the Trump administration to stop it, and a lawsuit ensued. And the lawsuit's basis was this couldn't be done by executive order. This couldn't be done by policy. It couldn't be done by the Secretary of HHS under Trump's first term. Again, this is 2018 to 2019. They went to fix this. And Democrats sued, saying you can't do that without congressional input. You can't do it by executive order. You can't do it by a policy. And when that lawsuit came for appeal, the Biden administration, because there was an election and the Biden administration was now in place, did not appeal the judgment. And it went by the wayside. And no fixes were ever made. And then for 4 years, the Biden administration never fixed anything. And you have the governor there failing to say that. You have the governor there, that earlier story where I told you, where dozens of nursing homes have closed in Pennsylvania over the past 4 years. Governor didn't seem concerned then. He was the governor, right? Didn't seem concerned then, but now because it's politics, it's us versus them, it's a big deal. Well, the hearings today were just on this. Just on this, where the HHS Secretary Kennedy talked about this and saying, we tried this in the first term. Well, Trump tried this in the first term of his presidency. And Democrats stopped it. And they failed to appeal it, and they didn't do anything. And now we're doing it again. We're looking to address this, and we need Congress's help. So we'll see where that'll go.
As you point out, the Trump administration initially tried to address this disparity, which is destroying rural health care. And as you know, many of these rural hospitals not only provide critical access to care, without them, patients would have to drive sometimes hours to get to an emergency room. They're absolutely critical in those regions, but they're also important economic drivers for many of those regions. And they're institutions that provide cohesion to those communities. Oh, if we want to preserve rural America as a livable space with dignity, enrichment, prosperity, and good health that they deserve, we need to keep those hospitals in and those treatment institutions in good shape and good financial. We need to keep them financially viable. The Trump administration, the initial Trump administration, 2016 to 2020, tried to do that, unfortunately, to redress those disparities. Unfortunately, as you know, as you pointed out, the Biden administration did not robustly respond to a court challenge, and we got a very bad decision from that. That said, that my agency has no power to redress this disparity, but I pledge to work with you and with Congress. Change has to be statutory, and we will do our job at providing technical support, including the kind of studies that you just mentioned that show how badly this disparity is wounding rural America.
So there's basically an overview of what the problem was. And this change in the formula between rural and urban hospitals in Medicaid funding needs to be done through Congress. The law needs to be changed so the funding can be changed. The Trump administration tried it, and they were sued. And the Biden administration failed to appeal that lawsuit, and that was lost. But they didn't fix it for the whole 4 years that they were in office. Governor Shapiro didn't fix it or didn't talk about it for 4 years while he was the governor of Pennsylvania, when dozens of nursing homes were closing because of this lack of funding. But now all of a sudden it's a priority. Now all of a sudden they're making up because they want to give tax breaks to the rich. They're cutting Medicaid for your grandparents and your disabled children and people who need it the most. But they don't talk about how in that very same tax bill, those making between $30,000 and $80,000 will pay 15% less in taxes in 2027. And that's reported by the nonpartisan Joint Committee on Taxation. Those making under $1 million will only pay less 8% less tax. And again, that's under $1 million. Those who are making under $30,000 will pay 21%. Decline in their taxes in 2027. No tax on tips, no tax on Social Security, no tax on overtime. How many rich people do you know that are making money doing those things? It's scare tactics. And you can even hear the governor talk about how I lost my train of thought there. You hear him talking about how this is on the backs, and he's going to break it down. That's what it is. He's going to break it down through congressional district, how it affects. And again, he hasn't seen it yet. He admits in that clip, I haven't seen the cuts yet. Well, you're on the radio talking about and scaring the public of Pennsylvania, those most vulnerable, those on disability, those that depend on this. You're lying to them at this point because you haven't even seen it, but you're saying it's happening. He said billions of dollars is going to be cut. Well, Secretary Kennedy also got into that today because during the hearing, a Democrat said, why are you taking Medicaid away from my sick constituents? And Secretary Kennedy said, that's wrong. 1 million people are claiming Medicaid illegally. 1 million people are collecting Medicaid and Obamacare together, which is illegal. 1 million illegal aliens estimated are using the Medicaid illegally. Millions of able-bodied adults on Medicaid refuse to get a job and don't qualify for Medicaid under the old COVID where it was expanded. These are the cuts they're talking about. They want illegal immigrants on Medicaid. They want people to be claiming Medicaid in two separate states, which is illegal, because that's what's going on. A million people, they said, were identified as collecting Medicaid or being on the rolls in two separate states. A million illegal aliens, a million people are on Medicaid and Obamacare, which is illegal. And able-bodied adults, and we talked about this yesterday, I know them and I know you know them. It happens. They're out there. Are there plenty of people working on Medicaid that are doing it the right way? There are millions. Of course there are. Are there people who need Medicaid to survive because they are legitimately disabled? Absolutely millions are. But that's what not what they're talking about. And they want to talk about how this is going to affect rural hospitals, Pennsylvania. You don't understand. It's going to be detrimental. Well, how come you didn't support the fix 4 years ago? How come you didn't appeal it? How come you didn't do it when you were in power for 4 years? But now it's an issue because it's about elections. It's about who's in power. They could care less for 4 years under the Biden administration. Josh Shapiro could care less about Pennsylvania's rural hospitals for the past 4 years. But now, because it's an election talking point and he has priorities looking forward, it's an issue. Well, they're not just going after waste, fraud, and mismanagement. Well, how come you didn't go after waste, fraud, and mismanagement for the past 4 years? You just let it go. Status quo. Business as usual. Let's move on. This system is failing. We are $36 trillion in debt. It will be cut for these people if it's not fixed. If we do not throw off illegal immigrants that don't belong here. If we don't identify people who are collecting Medicaid in two separate states. If we don't identify and kick off people who are going Medicaid and Obamacare. And yes, there's penalties for this. You will no longer be allowed to sign up for Medicaid again if you are caught defrauding it. So when they say they're kicking these people off and they're not going to be eligible for any other Medicare programs. Yes, because they stole from the taxpayer enough. They defrauded the taxpayer enough. So yes, and good. Ladies and gentlemen, you need to dig into the facts when people tell you these things. You had the governor of our state on telling us half-truths for politics. What else? When he could have used it as a moment, said, you know what? This is going to affect our rural hospitals the most. And I understand that the Trump administration tried to fix this and it never went through. So why don't we work together, Democrats and Republicans, the Trump administration, and I'm the governor of Pennsylvania. Why don't we step up and get together? I will go to Washington, D.C. anytime, any place to meet with the president of the United States. Let's get this Medicaid fixed when it comes to rural hospitals now. Let's work together to do it. I will push the Democrats, Mr. President. I hope you push the Republicans. Let's make this work for our seniors. Let's make this work for our people on disabilities. You don't hear that, right? Because they don't want to fix the problem. They want the problems to exist. Because if the problems don't exist, we need them less. That's what this is about. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It is 4:34. Let me go to the phone now. We have Lynn Labrosky. She's running for Scranton mayor on the Republican ticket. One of two, Lynn, right?
Yes.
All right, so thanks for joining the Rob O'Donnell Show today. Tell us a little bit about why you're running and what your platform is.
Okay, so I am running on the Republican ticket for Scranton mayor because back in 2021, when I saw the voter turnout, it made me incredibly sad. So I started to get more involved and learn more about politics. And over the last several years, I've just seen our city decline, and I think our city needs something different. Definitely leadership, organization, motivation. I mean, there's money being spent on things that are not necessary, and I could go on down the list. So I've just been trying the grassroots way to get my name out there and get my message out there and get as many people as I can out to the polls to vote on Tuesday.
And again, I watch the city, the Scranton City Council meetings all the time. You are a regular staple there, being there in the audience. You often talk and address council when you're there. Tell us your background as far as Scranton goes. You know, how long have you lived there? You know, do you work in Scranton? You know, tell us a little bit about yourself for voters.
Okay, so I am born and raised in Scranton. I grew up in Southside. We currently live in Westside. We own a small business. My husband and I run a small automotive repair shop on Cedar Avenue. And we've been in that building just about 10 years since February. My husband's been in business for 40 years. He's been fixing cars a long time. and I'd like him not to have to work so hard. But anyway, around this town, we stay busy. So I am a mother of four. My husband and I share four children, two boys, two girls. My oldest son has three daughters. So I have three granddaughters. We own a home in Scranton. Like I said, we run a small business. You know, running a small business, you have to be, you know, organized and know how to save money and make it work, especially like through COVID and things like that. So I feel like totally competent to do the job as mayor, because what we have now is just not working for Scranton. So, I stepped up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. One of two Republicans running, and there's a larger Democrat ticket, which goes to show that even Democrats are not happy with the current administration. There seems to be a need for change in Scranton from the voters because, you know, with only two Republicans, I believe there's four or how many Democrats are running?
Well, there's two on the ballot. But then there'll probably be some independents after primary.
Yeah.
We have to wait and see what happens next Tuesday. That's why it's so important for people to get out and vote primary if they could, you know. A lot of people in Scranton don't realize about write-ins, that you could write in a candidate. You know, if they're Republican, you could write them in as a Democrat on the Democrat ballot. Like, a lot of people don't realize that. And then I talked to quite a few people. I mean, we missed the deadline, but they're not too happy that they didn't have a voice in the primary because they're independent. So, you know, some people might be changing that after primary, but what you were saying earlier, I mean, and I heard Mark on the show, or Mark Payne, my friend, you know, that's running for city council, and I agree with you, Rob. Like, people have to work together. They don't have to agree. I mean, I feel like disagreeing is what solves problems. That's how you hash it out. That's how you come to, you know, agreements and common sense solutions, and it's called compromise, you know. But when you have somebody that's in there and it's their way or the highway, well, you know.
Yeah. And, so, Lynn, if you were elected mayor of Scranton, what would be your initial thing that you would look to do?
I could probably name five things right off the top. I'd open City Hall. I'd bring common sense back to City Hall. I'd stop the wasteful spending. I'd do my best and figure out a way to fix the roads. And then you know, the big thing, I hate to put it last, but law and order. I mean, we got to stop the gangs and the crime and the drugs. And you know, we got to fully staff our police department. We have a mayor that thinks arbitration is perfectly normal when she could be negotiating contracts and bringing people to the table, trying to get along. You know, like I said, compromise. Arbitration, it just costs money. You know, lawyers are involved. And it's, to me, in my opinion, it's not necessary when you can come to solutions.
All right, so you're on the ballot, Lynn Labrosky. She's running for Scranton City Mayor on the Republican ticket. Anything else you want to tell the voters, Lynn?
If anybody out there is interested, I am having an event on Saturday night at the VFW on 2291 Rockwell Ave. That's the same day as the Veterans Day Parade in Scranton. And election night, if anybody's interested, I'm having a watch party at Clarkie's Billiards, and that's 850 Providence Road, starting around 7 p.m.
And are you on social media at all, where people could follow you and look at more what you're doing for the election?
Yeah, so people can find me. They can just look for Lynn Labrosky for Scranton Mayor, and it's Labrosky. And I do have a political page on Facebook.
All right, Lynn, thanks for joining us on the Rob O'Donnell Show and telling people a little bit about you. And good luck in the upcoming election.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for having me. I never called into you, so.
Well, now, here you go. You got the first one out of the way. Hopefully, there's more.
Well, grassroots, you got to get those free plugs, you know, because I appreciate it, Rob. Thank you.
All right, Lynn, you have a good one. Yeah, and anyone else running in the area you want to call in, feel more than welcome to. It's open. It's currently 4:40 here at WILK. Time for 2020 traffic and weather together. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio on this Wednesday, May 14th. It's also Police Memorial Week. And this is the point of the show where we honor our heroes here at home who made the ultimate sacrifice across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania on this day. On this day, I believe we have two. Patrolman Max Lefkowitz, McKeesport Police Department of Pennsylvania, 1924, was shot and killed near the intersection of Fifth Avenue and Market Street while attempting to arrest a man for disorderly conduct. During the arrest, the suspect suddenly pulled out a knife and stabbed him 12 times. Although wounded, Patrolman Lefkowitz continued to struggle with the man. The suspect was able to gain control of the patrolman's service weapon and shot him in the chest twice. The suspect fled the scene, but a blood trail led police to a boxcar where he was found unconscious due to loss of blood. The suspect, 32, was convicted of second-degree murder and sentenced to 20 years in prison. We have Detective Sergeant James Higgins, Erie Police Department, 1905. Detective Sergeant James Higgins was shot and killed while investigating a report of a suspicious person at the Central High School, 10th Street and Sassafras Street, 10:30 in the morning. After initial investigation, he returned to the station after finding nothing. He told another officer he was going to return to the school to check it a second time. While there a second time, he encountered the man, and he identified himself as a police officer. The suspect suddenly produced a handgun and shot him in the face. As he struggled with the suspect, he was shot two more times in the chest. The suspect fled and was never apprehended. And those are our two from Pennsylvania on this day, May 14th. We're also going to mix in a little today in history, because we were running a little long on segments here. Let me see. We have 1607, founding of Jamestown, the Virginia Company established the first permanent English settlement in North America at Jamestown, Virginia. 1796, the first smallpox vaccination. English physician Edward Jenner administered the first successful smallpox vaccination to an 8-year-old boy, laying the groundwork for the disease's eventual global eradication in 1980. 1804, Lewis and Clark expedition begins. The Corps of Discovery, led by Meriwether Lewis and William Clark, embarked on their journey from near present-day Hartford, Illinois, to explore the Louisiana Territory and Pacific Northwest. 1948, establishment of Israel. David Ben-Gurion declared the establishment of the independent state of Israel in Tel Aviv, leading to the 1948 Arab-Israeli War. 1961, Freedom Riders attacked in Alabama. An interracial group of Freedom Riders was attacked and firebombed by an angry white mob outside of Anniston, Alabama, while challenging segregation in interstate travel facilities. 1973, Skylab launched. NASA's launched Skylab, the United States' first space station into orbit, marking a significant milestone in space exploration. 1922, the Buffalo supermarket shooting. Racially motivated mass shooting occurred in Buffalo, New York, resulting in 10 deaths. Some notable birthdays today. 1944, George Lucas, renowned filmmaker of Star Wars and Indiana Jones. 1984, Mark Zuckerberg, co-founder of Facebook. 1969, Kate Blanchett, Academy Award-winning Australian actress known for her roles in Elizabeth and Lord of the Rings. Notable deaths, 1998, Frank Sinatra. Nothing else needed to be said there, just Frank Sinatra, old blue eyes. And 2015, B.B. King, influential American blues guitarist and singer, passed away in Las Vegas, Nevada. So that's looks like our today in history. I also saw that the founder of Ben, one of the founders, so there's two of them, I don't know which one he is, but one of the founders of Ben & Jerry's was escorted out of the HHS secretary's hearing, Secretary Kennedy's hearing today, for getting vocal during the hearing and had to be removed by Capitol Police. That's the founder of Ben & Jerry's ice cream, which if you know what they're involved with, it's no surprise. No surprise there at all. Let me tell you about the Good Feet store, located right here in Scranton on the corner of Route 6 in Commerce Boulevard, across from the Olive Garden. They're making it easier than ever to feel your best. I have them in my shoes. I made the mistake of not having them in you know, a couple weeks ago, and I paid the price for at least a week. But I'm all good now, and I make sure, you know, just today, I wore a different pair of shoes today. Weather was a little off, so, you know, it was a little rainy and messy outside. So I got pulled the inserts out of my sneakers, put them in my Hey Dudes that I'm wearing today, and I'm all good to go. No problem there. So say goodbye to foot pain and hello to personalized comfort with the Good Feet Arch Supports. No waiting. They're immediately available. And the best part, they're proudly made in the USA. So you could check them out by visiting 1945 Commerce Boulevard in Scranton. Call them at 570-534-0980 or check them online at goodfeet.com. And again, listen, I've had a lot of interventions as far as my sciatica, my back pain. I have fused discs. I have herniated discs. I have had sciatica so bad I couldn't even get out of bed for a while. And, you know, I thought, you know, my careers were over. One of the reasons I left Virginia, just couldn't keep up pace anymore, you know, had some more surgeries, some more issues going on. But in the over two years now with Good Feet Arch Supports, I haven't had any issues. So knock on wood for that, because you're not going anywhere without Good Feet. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. You can call or text at 570-883-0098. Get involved with the conversation. Let me go to the phone now. We have Bob Bolus, who's at the reassessment town hall. Bob, how are you?
Good, brother. How are you tonight?
Good. So you were at the reassessment town hall?
Yes, sir. And I spoke there, and I made them very, very aware that we have filed a lawsuit against the tax assessment and the tax increase. And we have people calling that are now going to join my lawsuit, and we're going to convert it to a class action suit where the voice of the people are going to become important, not just the couple. And where they're getting hammered by talking to one attorney and paying through the nose. We'll have a group of attorneys that will be getting compensated. So the cost to everybody is going to be pennies on the dollar, so to speak, by joining the class action and trying to do it individually. This has got to come to a halt. What they've done there is ridiculous. You can't get them on a phone. And their appraisals are based basically on assumption. You know, we think we could sell it for this or you could sell it for that. Well, if everything's sold so great, none of the realtors that have a portfolio, everything would be gone the day they get it. So it's time to put the BS to the side and think about the people in this community, especially the young guys, people that are coming there and the elderly, and they're going to get hammered on property that has got this ridiculous number that they're trying to assess everybody to.
Yeah, the informal, this informal meeting, it's not even a hearing, it's an informal meeting with Tyler Technologies, yeah, really doesn't hold any true weight as far as the assessment goes, unless they did something wrong or they miscalculated your house as far as square footage or something like that. The true thing is going to be the actual appeal which takes place. And listen, I encourage as many people as possible to appeal, because here's the thing, Bob, that I see. If these appeals start getting one at a record number, if people are going in and saying it's just going to goes to show that there's an issue. Now there's a tangible evidence that this was done improperly. So if I'm saying if these assessments are way off, and it's proven when people start getting appraisals, when people start, you know, coming in with comparisons and getting their values lowered tremendously by a large number, you know, I think it gives a credence to it, a bigger problem and maybe a bigger issue for this company that did this and the county itself.
Well, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, and I'm doing it on the benefit of not only myself but everybody else that can become involved in this to have their rights heard properly, you know, and defend their rights without spending a ton of money on legal fees.
Yeah, because that's another part of this. You know, I already hear lawyer firms and firms in our area saying, you know, if you're affected by the reassessment process, you know, hire us and we'll guide you through the process for who knows what percentage of what. So, you know, there's already people making money off of it.
Well, that's what we're out to prevent, the gouging of our citizens in the community. That's why I'm doing it as a class action. And now, everybody's voice will get heard, and they'll get heard properly, but they're not going to get drained financially.
Now, Bob, the tax increase for this year that was done last year and the reassessment, they're two separate issues. Is there one lawsuit addressing the both? Is there two separate lawsuits? Because I see them as two issues.
Yeah, I did. They're two separate lawsuits.
Okay. All right. And
one goes hand in hand with the other when it's all said and done. It's the bottom line for what we're paying here, and we're paying for a lot of nonsense. Plus, we're going to include the school district and the school boards in it because, as you know, a lot of your money goes toward filling their pockets.
Well, once the reassessment's done, it's going to affect all of that as well, those entities that you just named, but that's based off the county's reassessment by this company. But I have heard the stories of, you know, people trying to get in touch with this company with no avail, people showing up for meetings and the meetings being canceled and not being able to reschedule those meetings. So that there are a bunch of issues here.
I already tried that with them, so that's what prompted me to go the route we're going.
All right. Well, Bob, I appreciate you checking in with us and keep us up to speed on where this goes forward.
And may I say one more thing, Rob?
Sure.
As you know, I'm doing a write-in as a Republican for mayor in Scranton, and tomorrow evening I'm hosting a party over at the St. Mary of Assumption Church on Pittston Avenue. And it's going to be free hot dogs, but they're coming from Abe's on South Main Street at Wilkes-Barre is where I'm getting them from. And burgers will be all coming from them tomorrow. So I'm asking anybody that's interested in hearing what we got to say and interested in writing my name, Bob Wallace, in for Mayor in Scranton, and getting what you really need, please show up tomorrow.
All right, Bob, I appreciate you checking in with us. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you, my friend.
Bye. Yeah, and if anyone else wants to come in that's running for something, we'll see. Some things going on now. That judge from Wisconsin that helped hide the illegal immigrant because ICE was there, brought them out through the jury room, and then had them flee and were caught by FBI agents and DE agents that were unrelated to the ICE agents that were there. Well, a federal grand jury just indicted that Wisconsin judge yesterday on that immigration case, allowing the charges to continue. So the state Supreme Court suspended that judge from the bench in late April, saying the move was necessary to preserve the public confidence in the judiciary. But now a federal grand jury has indicted that judge. So it does appear that will go to trial, and we'll see where that leads. It's coming up on 5 o'clock here on WILK News Radio. We'll be back for the final hour in just a minute.